Today's shiur, Maseches Bava Basra, will be beginning from the top of Kuf Yud Gimel Omed Aleph. Before beginning the shiur, we recommend your printing out the Daf Gemara, and even better, ordering your personal volume of Maseches Bava Basra. We are in the middle of a discussion that is involved with transfer of property from Shevet to Shevet. The general topic would be known as Hasovas Nachla. This situation arises when a woman from one Shevet marries a man from another Shevet. Upon the woman's death, her property, if she were from another Shevet, would be inherited by either her husband or her son. The issue of husband inheriting wife was the subject of a long discussion in the previous Dapim. As a result of this phenomenon of woman from one Shevet being inherited by husband or son from another Shevet, the Torah said that upon entering Eretz Israel, during in that generation, the woman was instructed to find a mate from the same Shevet that she was from. Because if not, there would be a problem of Hasovas Nachla caused either by her husband or by her son. We started toward the end of the last Shiur with the presentation of two brises, the first one at the end of Kuf Yud Beis Omid Beis, the second one at the beginning of this particular daf. In these two brises, there are two psukim that are presented, Bamidbar Perek Lamed Vav, Posuk Zayin and Posuk Tes. Posuk Zayin is felt to be a reference to the son being responsible for the transfer of property if there would be a difference in tribes between mother and father, and Posuk Tes being a reference to husband being responsible for that transfer of property if she would marry out of her Shevet. In the first Brisa, it seemed to be a matter of Pashtus, of simplicity, of obviousness, that Posuk Tes was a reference to Hasova Sabal, and that Posuk Zayin was not so clear a reference to Hasova Saben. It became clear at the end, but out of default. Namely, since Posuk Tes is clearly a reference to Hasova Sabal, therefore, Posuk Zayin must be a reference to Hasovas HaBen. Let's continue now with the top of Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Tanya Idach. This brisa, we can note, begins with Posuk Tes, and as is characteristic of many brisa forms, the opening of the brisa is a matter of question, namely of uncertainty. And as the brisa unfolds, other information that is certain is presented, and as a result of that, we come to conclude the opening uncertain point. We open up with Pasuk Tes, V'loi sosuv nachlo mimate lemate acher. The woman is instructed to take a man from the same Shevet as she is from, so that there shall be no transfer of property from one tribe to another. V'sibas habal hakosuv medaber, the one responsible for the transfer of property, if the instructions are not followed, would be the husband. The husband inheriting his wife. Ata oimer b'sibas habal o eno ela b'sibas haben. Are you telling me that it's husband that is referred to in this pasuk? Maybe it's a reference to the son, namely if the woman is from Shevet Shimon and she marries a man from Shevet Reuven, their son will be identified with Shevet Reuven, his father's Shevet. And when the son inherits his mother, there would be this property transfer. Therefore, Kishu Omer, when the Torah says in Pasuk Zayin, Velo Sosuv Nachlo Livnei Yisrael Mimate El Mate, that the woman is instructed to marry a man from the same Shevet so as to not cause transfer of property. Hare hasibas hasavas haben omur. This is obvious to the Brisa here that Pasuk Zion is referring to hasavas haben. Therefore, that which was in question before about Pasuk Tes being uncertain, what should I do with Pasuk Tes? So out of default, we will say that Pasuk Tes is a reference to husband causing the transfer of property. However, when you look at both of these brises as a single unit, we can say they both agree, mimate lemata achir besibas habal hakosuv medaber. It seems to be very clear to both brises, or we should say at the end of the day, according to both brises, pasuk tes is a reference to sibas habal. My mashma. Here the Rashbam is very, very careful and very precise in directing the question. The question here is, how do you see that Pasuk Tes is a reference to Sivas Habal? The question is directed to the Tanakhama. According to the Tanakhama, it seemed obvious to him that Pasuk Tes was Sivas Habal. Hence, the question over here is, how is it so obvious to the Tana of Brisa, number one, that Pasuk Tes is in fact referring to Sivas Habal? Answer. The following word is a name. Simon. Omar Rabo Bar Rav Shilo. So Simon quotes Rabo. Omar Kro. Before we go further, let's glance at the outside margin, the Nosei Mivneh. We have a series of triangles. These triangles are Nisyonos Lahoychiach Meha Mikro, Deha Posuk Bamidbor Lamidvov, Posuk Tes, Mimate Lamata Acher. These are a series of triangles trying to prove from that Posuk, namely Bamidbor Lamidvov, Posuk Tes, is Midubar B'Sibas Habal. That's what it's talking about. So, what is the first attempt? Omar Kro, Ish. It says in Pasuk Tes, the word Ish, which is Mashma, which seems to be a reference to one's husband. The Gemara asks, Trevayu Ish Ksiv Behu, in both Sukkim, Pasuk Zion, as well as Pasuk Tes, you have that word. So how is it clear that Pasuk Tes is a reference to husband? Elo Omar of Nahmar Yitzhok, Omar Kro, Yidavku. Cleave. Cleave unto, stick unto. The Gemara asks, well, Travayu Yidavku Ksiv Behu, in both Psukim you have that word appearing. These Psukim, for your convenience, has already been written into our Gemara Shas Ozir on the previous Amud on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis on the inside margin, and you can easily see by scanning those two Psukim that you've got the word Ish in both Psukim, and you've got the word Yidbeku in both Psukim. Elo Omar Rava, Omar Kro, Yidbeku Matois. The tribes will stick one unto the other. This would indicate that through marrying a husband from the same Shevet, that will cause the fulfillment of the Gemara's, of the Torah's teaching. Rav Ashi Omar, Omar Kro, Mimate Lamata Acher. From the fact that Pasuk Tes says uses the word acher, I know that we're referring to husband in that pasuk, who ben lav acher hu. We couldn't possibly refer to ben, one's son, as an acher being an outsider. The Gemara continues. Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rav Yochanan, Omar Rav Yanai, Omar Rebbe. Umotu Bo, another version, is Mishmei de Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha. We have a rather unusual marking that appears here. What appears to be a frame is presented with a dashed line around it, a dashed frame. We attempt to explain this on the inside margin. Tam lemizgeres mekuvkav. The reason for the broken lined frame, the teichen ze la lo muvo kebraiso, it's not brought in the Gemara as a Tanaic source, af apishu midivrei Tanoim, even though the content of it would be from Tanoim. As we can see here, it's either in the name of Rebbe or Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, both of which are from the Tanaic period. The note, topic heading, on the outside margin, the nose, Ein habal noitel benichse ishtoi beroui kebemuchsak. A husband, we've said up till now, inherits his wife. He does not inherit from his wife under all possible circumstances. There's a circumstance known as roui, in which he does not inherit. What would be an example of ro'ui? So imagine the following. A man married to a woman who has a father. We have to imagine, for our case of in describing ro'ui, that the woman, the wife, died before her father. Basically, the wife, under normal circumstances, would have inherited her father. However, she died before her father. The father's property, vis-a-vis the daughter, is described as roi. She was fit to inherit. However, by virtue of the fact that she died before her father, she never came into possession of her father's property. What happens to that property? So we will tell you in the ensuing Gemara that the husband does not inherit that. Rather, that property will get inherited by other relatives of the father. Namely, it stays on that side of the family. Continuing in the Gemara. Minayin leba'al she'enoi noitel beroi kebemuchsak. As we said, an example where the wife of this man dies while her father is still alive. And we have to add, of course, that this couple had no sons. There were no children. So we will tell you that the husband does not inherit those properties. Shenemar usgoiv hoylid es yo'ir. Vayehi loy esrim v'sholosh orim be'eretz ha-gil'od. This pasuk we saw in a previous Gemara. The pasuk describes Sgoiv as being the father of Yo'ir, and it says that Yo'ir had 23 cities in the region of Gil'od. Minayin li-Yo'ir shelohoyo loy l'Sgoiv. How could it be that Yo'ir, the son, had property that his father did not have? Elo melamed. This pasuk shows us shenosa sgoiv isha. Sgov, the father of Yo'ir, had married a woman, umesa b'chayim orisheha, and she died while her father was still alive. Umesu morisheha, and eventually her father died. In this case, we'll say Yo'ir's grandfather died. V'yorsha Yo'ir, and the grandson inherited. We have to emphasize, the grandson inherited, but not going through Sgoiv. V'oimer v'lozer ben Aaron meis v'yikberu oisoi begivas Pinchas benoi. This pasuk as well we saw in that previous Gemara. The pasuk describes Elozer dying and being buried in property owned by his son. Minayim lePinchas shelohoya lo Elozer. How could it be that Pinchas had property that his father did not have? Malamed, it teaches us, it shows us, Shenos Elozer Isha, Meso, Bechaim or Isha, that Elozer's wife died while her father was still alive. Umesu Morisha, and then her father, namely Pinchas's grandfather, the grandfather died. Viorsha, Pinchas, and Pinchas, the grandson, inherited. In this presentation, you notice there are two psukim that basically serve the same role as it appears now. The Gemara asks, "My viomer, what do I need the second pasuk for?" V'chitema. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's just take a note at the outside margin, the mivneh. The v'chitema is double underlined with dots in it. Hezberim lama lo nuchal umoid din hanal. Why is it that we cannot learn the aforementioned halacha that a husband does not receive the ro'i of nichse ishto? Why is it that we can't learn that din meha posuk rishon from the first posuk involving sgoiv and yoyir? So let us see the Gemara. V'chi tema. One might have learned that Yoyir dehave nosiv itza umesa veyorsha. It could be that, how is it that Yoyir had property that his father Sgoiv did not have? Very simply because Yoyir married a woman, she died, and Yoyir, the husband, inherited that property, which of course was never in the hands of Sgoiv. So from that pasuk, I wouldn't be able to learn the halacha that the husband is einoi noitel baroi. Therefore, Talmud lomar velozer ben Aaron meis. Therefore, we bring in this second pasuk. V'chitema, you might say to naflo lei b'stei charamim. This actually is what the Gemara said previously, that Pinchas received the property through the Cherem institution, where a dedication of property was made to the holy fund, if you will, and Cherem property goes to Kohanim, as was suggested on Kuf Yud Beis Omid Aleph. Omar Kro Benoi. The Pasuk by Elozer and Pinchas, it says at the end of that pasuk, "Begivas Pinchas benoi, nachlo haruuyo loi." It's referring to property that was, in theory, potentially available to Elozer. That was inherited, viorsha beno, that was inherited by Pinchas. What do we mean by property that was ruuyo lo? Notice, of course, we dashed underlined this expression because this was the focus of our discussion. What does that mean? It means that had Elozer's wife survived her father, so she would have inherited that property, and eventually Elozer would have received it. But since she died before her father, it was only potentially Elozer's, but not actually his. Who therefore inherited it? The grandson. But from this we see that ein habal notel beroi kebemuchsak. Ubenei achois yorshim achei imam. We say that the nephew inherits his uncle. More specifically, a person's mother who had a brother, that person will inherit her brother. Tana, b'nei achois v'loi b'nois achois. We have a Tanaic source that says sons of the sister and not the daughters of the sister. Lemai Hilchasa. What is this seemingly exclusionary source teaching us? One thing is for sure. The source is not coming to exclude the daughters of that woman from inheriting the uncle. Therefore, if we're excluding the daughters of that woman, in what context? Omar Rav Sheshes Likadem. What this source is teaching us is something that's not really new to us, and that is that sons preempt daughters. Namely, if you have a situation of a nephew and niece, and the question arises, who is going to inherit their uncle, namely their mother's brother? The answer is, the nephew will inherit his uncle in the capacity of his preempting the niece. The Rashbam learns here with the Girsa of Dalet added, Detoni Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, Kamei de Rav Huna. This is being brought in to support the teaching of Rav Sheshes. Pasuk Yud Aleph in the Parsha of Nachla, which we've made reference to numerous times already, Pasuk Yud Aleph from Bamidbor Chof Zayin, V'yorash. The Rashbam actually adds the word from the Pasuk, V'yorash Oisa. This pasuk is at the end of a series of psukim that we've noted already in the past that deal with the inheritance hierarchy. Who is first in line, and if they're not around, who is second in line, etc. This pasuk appears at the end of that series of relatives, and it says, V'yorash o'isa, makish yerusha shnia liyerusha rishoyna. The expression yerusha shnia is to be taken in a more general sense, not specifically second one, but it means all subsequent Yerushas, all subsequent inheritance scenarios are compared to the first one. What was the first one that was alluded to in the sequence of inheritances? The first one was a reference to son inheriting father. Ma Yerusha Rishona ben Koidem Labas, just like in the case of father dying, and the question comes up, son versus daughter, and we say son preempts daughter, Af Yerusha Shnia ben Koidem Labas, so too in the subsequent inheritance scenarios, whatever they may be, including nephews inheriting uncles, we say that the son will preempt the daughter. In the last example, the nephew will preempt the niece. As you can see, we have a slash marking that indicates that the ensuing Gemara, the next piece of Gemara, is a new topic. New and not related to the ideas mentioned previously. Tani Rabba Bar Chanina, Kamei de Rav Nachman. The following Tanaic source is presented, V'hoya b'yoyim hanchiloi es bonav. That's a posuk that literally says that on the day that one bequeaths his properties unto his children, that on the day that property inheritance takes place. The source continues to say something that we will find to be very surprising. It says, "Bayoim atomapil nachlois viatomapil nachlois balayla," that inheritance takes place by day and does not take place at night. This arouses the obvious question: could that possibly be? We've presented a long question marking we're presenting it as a she'ela, a question. It could be presented as a kushya, possibly a difficulty, but all the same, it's a question that demands clarification of the source we just read. We can note that the length of this question continues to Kuf Yud Dalid Amud Aleph. The topic that we will be dealing with on the side of the Gemara we've offered as a topic heading, Nachla Hu Inyan Shel Din Mishpat, that inheritance falls under a general topic, a broad topic of law, of legal procedure. The source we just read said that inheritance takes place by day and not by night. But we're going to ask, could that be? Amalei Abaye. Elo me'ata, deshachiv biyamama hu diyarsi le bonei. Man deshachiv b'leilo lo yarsi le bonei. Could it be that if a person dies by day, so then his sons will inherit him. However, if one dies at night, his sons don't inherit him. That can't be. Bilmo, Abaye suggests, maybe din nachlois ko amris. This sanya, maybe this source is a reference to legal procedure concerning inheritance, as is illustrated in the following source, V'hoysa livnei Yisrael lechukas mishpat. Notice this is from Bamidbar, Perek Chof Zayin. It's the end of Pasuk. This is part of the Psukim that are found in Bamidbar Chof Zayin. And it says there that this shall be unto the children of Israel as chukas mishpat, as rules of law. Oir o kol ha-parsha kulo liyois din. The parsha of Nachlos culminates in a state of legal procedure. What does this mean for us? Uchid Rav Yehuda, and as per the teaching of Rav Yehuda, the Amar Rav Yehuda. In effect, what Rav Yehuda tells us, he gives us a scenario that involves property, inheritance or bequeathing of property, and how it ties into legal procedure. The Gemara continues, presenting two cases. Aleph, Shloisha Shenichnesu Levakir Esachoyle. Three people come to visit a person who's very ill. They're present there. Three, by the way, is a very significant number in the context of law. Three represents the minimum size of a beis din, of a court. So you have three people visiting a person who's in the in death throes, and the person is indicating to his visitors what he wants to be done with his property. After hearing what he says with regard to his property allocation, Rotsu Kaisvin, Rotsu Oisin Din. They can jot down, they can record what he says, and this would be, in effect, recording testimony, recording what he wants, or Rotsu Oisin Din. They can, on the spot, issue a ruling according to his instructions, who gets what. And as a result of that, there cannot be any protestations afterwards. Let us take a look at the Rashbam on the lower part of the page. Rotsu oisin din the hashloishaninu. They are three. V'donin v'yomrim. They can rule and say kach adin sheploni yito chelik zeh uploni chelik zeh, that so and so will get this portion and so and so that. She demayan mechuvonim b'shove. These portions are of equal value. The koisvin lohem psak din, and they would then record what they rule. Shelo yuchlu oy la'arer ze al ze klum. And after this ruling, they would not be able to protest one on the other. Continuing in the Gemara, shnayim. However, if two came to visit this ill individual, koisvin v'ein oisin din. All they can do is record the testimony, but they cannot issue a ruling. The Omar Rav Chisda lo yishanu el abayom. This teaching that three can oisin din, can issue a ruling, this is so only if they're visiting him by day. Day is the daytime, is the time in which the courts sit in session. Avol balaylo, if this visitation were to take place at night, afilu shloisha, even if three were there, kaisvin v'ein oisin din, all they can do is record what he says and cannot rule based on that. Namely, even the next day, the Rashbam points out, those three people could not rule based on what they heard and wrote down the night before. Afilu shlosha, as we just read, is koisvin v'ein oisin din. This is all the teaching of Rav Yehuda. My taima, why is it that these three who visited at night cannot rule the next day based on what they heard? Dehavu luhu edim. Because at nighttime, even though there are three, even if they would be 1,000, their status is no more than that of witnesses. So they have a din, they have a status of witness. The ein aid na sedayon. And a witness cannot flip into the role of judge. We notice a question mark over here. The reason for this is that this is the end of a question that began with Abaye's wonderment as what is the explanation of the strange source that spoke about only by day and not by night. And Abaye suggested maybe the kavona of the source is din nachlos koamris. This was on the previous omid. And as such, it was a question. Maybe the pshat in that source is din nachlos, as we just described the issue of the three visiting by day as opposed to the three visiting by night. Well, all of this was posed to Rabo Bar Hanina, who taught the source. Omar Lay, so Rabo Bar Hanina, who heard Abaye's suggestion, says, in, right, hachi nami koamina. This is exactly what I had in mind as well. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.